Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Haha, stuff happens behind the scenes. It's the Brian Lehrer Show. Good morning, everybody. Today's news is another demonstration that the rise of Bill de Blasio is also the rise of the Working Families Party. Founded in the 90s to support candidates with progressive values, the Working Families Party backed enough winning candidates by a few years ago to allow the Progressive Caucus of City Council to form. Out of that caucus came the new speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito, and the bill passed yesterday, which the old council would not pass, paid sick leave for workers at any company with five or more employees. Now the Working Families Party is aiming for a single-payer health care system in New York. It's expanded to Connecticut and Oregon, where it just helped win a pilot program that helps students get through college debt-free. So here's the question. Will the Working Families Party hold Mayor de Blasio's feet to the fire as mayor when he makes the political compromises that all mayors must? And what about this election year, featuring Governor Cuomo's bid for a second term after governing to the right of the WFP? With me now is Bill Lipton, leader of the Working Families Party in New York State. Bill, welcome to WNYC. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Happy to be here. Good morning.
So in addition to the paid sick leave bill, council passed a resolution yesterday, 48-3, to support Mayor de Blasio's call for a tax hike on the top 1% in the city to pay for universal pre-K and middle school after school. Governor Cuomo, as you know, opposes that tax hike. That seems like the number one issue for Mayor de Blasio so far. Is it the number one issue for the Working Families Party?
It's at the very top. You know, there's a number of things that we feel passionate about right now and that we're working around the clock on. But this is certainly a great articulation, I think, of what we need to be focused on as a progressive movement, as you know, in terms of what working people need in this city. I couldn't think of a better policy to address inequality than the mayor's proposal. And to his credit, he campaigned on it. And he made a promise, and he's doing everything he can to fight for it and to deliver. And I think it would be a huge win for New Yorkers.
So pre-K. But doesn't Governor Cuomo have a point when he says we can't have a two-tier system for pre-K in the state? New York City gets it because it can raise the money through a local tax hike on our many wealthy people, but the rest of the state can't have it because that tax base doesn't exist elsewhere. So Cuomo is offering to fully fund pre-K for the whole state out of state funds, no city tax hike required. Why isn't that better for everyone?
You know, I think the governor has a good point. I think there's a win-win scenario out there. You know, when you talk to some of the mayors and the, you know, assembly members and senators from upstate, and you ask them that question, you know, I think on first blush they're like, you know, why should the city be able to do this? And just as you said, you know, well, we're not able to expand our universal pre-K. But when you say, hey, why don't we do the combined Cuomo de Blasio plan, we allow the city to, you know, ask the wealthiest who have done so well in the last, you know, few decades to pay a little bit more so that we can provide here in the city universal pre-K. And then outside of the city, we can dedicate some of the funds that the governor is providing to make sure that it's not a two-tier system and that everyone, you know, gets that, that we're able to provide that universal pre-K throughout the state. I think that's the win-win, Brian, that New Yorkers want to see. Everyone knows that universal pre-K is perhaps the best proposal out there for dealing with inequality, that the data is, you know, is unequivocal. It's across the board popular. Republicans, Democrats, working families, conservatives, everyone knows that this is something we've got to do. And I think if we look at both proposals that are out there, it's a great opportunity to make sure that people across the state benefit and that, you know, we become we pick up our mantle as a leading progressive state.
So de Blasio and you on one side, Cuomo on the other side, agree on pre-K, are stuck on how to do it. What about this as a possible solution so the whole thing doesn't come crashing down over the monetary issues? You and the mayor take yes for an answer, then go back to Albany next year after Cuomo is safely reelected and ask for the tax hike for some other inequality-busting things that might also make good policy. Then maybe you'll get both pots of money and avoid this divisive fight on pre-K, which the governor is trying to give us?
You know, it's an interesting idea. I think that the concern that people have is that there needs to be a dedicated revenue stream that, you know, fairness dictates that it should be progressive and that it should be recurring. And I think that if we're able to you know, get those needs met so that our kids can really get that leg up, I think that, you know, an accommodation can be reached.
Bill Lipton is the New York State Director for the Working Families Party, my guest on WNYC. And the Working Families Party originated in the city, but you're the state director. So in addition to your city agenda of things like paid sick leave and a higher city minimum wage, do you have a state policy legislative agenda in this state election year with a few things at the top?
We do. We're very focused on the state right now. You know, as many people are well aware, the city is actually, in many respects, the creature of the state. And, you know, a lot of the things we can do to address inequality are actually preempted by state law. So we think that it's incredibly important to have a focused, progressive agenda for New York State. At the top of our list is public financing for elections. We think that the city system is a you know, needs some tweaks here and there, but is a really terrific way to take the influence of big money out of politics to make sure that the Koch brothers don't have more power than your average, you know, working person in New York. And we want to extend a system like that at the state level. And there's a lot of support from that, from good government groups and reformers, from working people who are reading about all these super PACs and think that politics in New York, politics in our nation, shouldn't be a argument between a couple of billionaires, but that, you know, we need to be able to elect people who are really accountable for us. And, Brian, you can imagine the different systems, right? In Connecticut, they have public financing of elections, and people get elected by collecting lots of small contributions, and then they get a, you know, once they demonstrate viability, that they have broad support, they're able to get public financing, and when they run, they think the people that I owe are regular working people in my district and in my state. Contrast that with a system where there's no public financing, where there's lots of loophole, the LLC loophole and lots of other campaign loopholes. If you want to get ahead in that environment, the thing you want to do is you want to pass legislation that various interest groups really are pushing so that you can raise as much money possible so you have a big war chest right, so that people will take you seriously.
And
it's
been the
flawed system.
That's been the working family sort of community organizing politics model in the city that seems to have had some success with our public campaign financing law here. Did you see Gail Collins' column today, though, which seems to suggest, in part, it's not quite this simple, but it seems to suggest that in Arizona, where they have public financing, that helped pave the way for enough wackos who weren't accountable to the business community to get elected to push through that bill that would have allowed discrimination against gays by any business that Governor Brewer had to veto last night.
You know, I didn't read that column, and obviously that's of concern. The data and the experience we've seen from, you know, the states we've looked at is that is actually quite to the contrary, that, you know, and I think the experience we've had right here in the city, where, you know, you see people like Tish James and Scott Stringer, range of terrific city council members, and Mayor de Blasio himself. These are, I think, you know, pretty exemplary progressive elected officials who never would have been elected were it not for public financing of elections. In Connecticut, I think it's the same thing. So I think that, you know, no system is perfect. There's going to be some things that you know, democracy is the best system. It's not a perfect system.
Right.
And I'm sure Gail raises some good concerns, but I think on the whole, it's far better than letting our politics be a contest between a couple of billionaires.
And that's not the heart of her column. It's just, it was sort of in there, suggested in there, and I don't want to say that she comes out in against public financing in that column, because she definitely does not. But did you see the article in the Times today about Cuomo trying to stop a leading Republican from running against him, Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, with Cuomo portraying Astorino as too right-wing for New York on social issues like gay rights and guns? And the most intriguing part of that article is the suggestion that Cuomo actually wants Republicans to keep control of the state Senate, because they support Cuomo's fiscal conservatism on taxes and spending. That can't sit well with the Working Families Party. Do you see Andrew Cuomo that way?
You know, we're optimistic that the governor is going to play a really helpful role in taking back the state Senate this year. We think that obviously the last time the Democrats were in control, it wasn't a perfect scenario, but people should actually look back at some of the legislation that was passed during that period. There was a whole set of terrific things. The Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, there was progressive taxation that was passed, Green Jobs, Green New York. I think that, you know, we're hoping that the governor will want to have a state legislature that's fully democratic and that's progressive as a partner, so that he can do, you know, pass public financing of elections, pass local wage authorization and other things that I think would really address inequality and give people a leg up.
So that's what you're hoping for. It doesn't sound like that's what he's hoping for. Did the governor get the Working Families Party endorsement in 2010?
He did.
And
yes.
given his record, might you endorse a Democratic primary challenger or a Working Families Line challenger in November?
You know, we're focused on working with the governor right now to try to get some big things done. We're optimistic that we're going to be able to get those things done so that we have, a story that we can tell together about how we've, we're working together to improve the lives of working families. And that's really our focus right now is working with the governor. We're hoping that public financing of elections will be something that we can do together. We're hoping we can raise wages for fast food workers, for car wash workers, for people who are struggling and, pass some legislation that would enable that to happen in many parts of the state where the cost of living is so high. You know, we want to see some movement from the governor on those important things, and I think, you know, we're hopeful that that'll happen, and we think when it does that, you know, we'll be able to move together as we did in 2010. That's our goal.
Bill Lipton, New York State Director for the Working Families Party, for another few minutes. Let me touch a couple of other things briefly. Single-payer health insurance for New York, which the WFP has come out in favor. How would it work, briefly? And do you really need to fight that fight right now when we already have Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act?
You know, I'm not a policy expert, Brian, and I don't want to purport to be. And obviously, we are strong proponents of Obamacare. We think that, some of the many advances that it's provided to people in terms of getting rid of existing precondition legislation, discrimination, have been a huge advance. You know, just the millions of people have flocked to sign up. After the hiccups, millions of people have signed up, and obviously, this has been a stain on our nation's history. Healthcare is a right and a huge step forward.
So why is there a Working Families Party release that calls for single payer in New York?
You know, again, I'm not an expert. There's a couple of obvious. You know, we think we could do better. In Vermont, they're just about to. They're in the process of passing single payer there. We think it's a better system. In terms of right under the Affordable Care Act, they're still going to be working families who are going to be struggling to pay health insurance. It's a big improvement,
Would that abolish all the private health insurance companies in New York State and make the government the only insurer?
You know, people are going to have lots of people can have lots of choices for the doctors they can see, but yes, the state would be the single the entity that provides reimbursements, and that would actually, as everyone knows, healthcare costs in this country are out of control, and that's something that people on the left and the right all agree on. And single payer, the data is incontrovertible that it really reduces costs in a way that frees up money to focus on prevention and improves the health care, the health of the population. So we think that it's the way to go. It's made a huge difference in the lives of working people in the many other states where they have a program like that. So we think it'll be we think we've made a lot of progress, but this will go still further in the direction of making people healthier and happier.
And just briefly, tell us about that Oregon pilot program that you spearheaded. There is a Working Families Party in Oregon to help get students through college debt-free. And could a version of that be proposed here?
you know, we haven't really discussed it in New York. We want to have deep conversations with, you know, the advocates like, you know, Nightberg, like our friends at the, you know, the PSC union that represents higher education and many other people. But the way it works in Oregon is that instead of taking out loans, people get to go to school for with no money up front, and then they pay back a percentage of their income over time. It's a real payment plan. It's like 22 years the way the analysts who have studied this have calculated. So people are paying for their education, but they're doing it as a percentage of their income over time. And just think about this, Brian. If you're a working person, and the economy is rough out there, and you're just not sure if you can afford to go to school, under this plan, you can take that chance, right? Because, let's say the economy tanks, or, let's say you're having a hard time finding a job. You'll have to make payments. You'll have to be responsible, but they'll be in proportion to what you can afford. So, that being said, you have to make them for a long time because, we have to make this system work. It's really like Social Security in reverse in a lot of ways. It's a great, it's a very intriguing system. There's a lot of interest in it across the country.
Bill Lipton, New York State Director for the Working Families Party. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come this morning, why is Chris Christie still backing his Port Authority appointee, David Sampson? Why 2014 is shaping up as a watershed year for the marijuana legalization movement, and a New York City trivia quiz today with the author of the book, I Never Knew That About New York City. Stay with us.